Oh, what's going on, grandkids? It's a very special edition of Stunt Granny Audio. Eric Nelson here with Dusty Giebink. Dusty, what is happening, my friend?
Oh, hello.
Hello, Mr. Belvedere. What do you know?
Not much. Bob Uecker was awesome in that show because he's awesome
yes,
in everything.
Totally a Bob Uecker vehicle.
Yep.
Gosh, it's funny, A, that when I hear a British accent, the first person I think of is Mr. Belvedere. It's also funny, though, in that the show is such a nostalgic thing for people of our age, because Dusty and I happened to be talking about nostalgic things in professional wrestling and decided we wanted to do an audio.
Yes, so, because it's either this or Robbie E. has a belt. So
Jesus Christ on a crutch. See, here's what we've got in store for you. I'll tell you the background of this. So, first of all, for a matter of full disclosure, Carly is out with three of her good friends and two of her sisters and her mom shopping for wedding dresses, which means I get the day off. So, when I get the day off, I do things like watch TNA Spin Cycle.
Oh, my God.
And when I watch this horse shit roundtable discussion, I see things like the championship edition of Spin Cycle featuring world champion Robert Roode or Bobby Roode. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
One half of the world tag team champion, Matt Morgan. You and
who's
I are fans.
I honestly don't know. Who's the other half?
The other half of the world tag team champions is a guy by the name of Crimson.
Okay, whatever.
I think we've established that we couldn't give two shits about Crimson if we had two assholes.
No.
And the world television champion in TNA Impact Wrestling is Robbie E.
Awesome.
I mean, come on.
I mean, that's great.
I'm pretty sure he won that championship from Eric Young also.
Yes, he had to have. That Eric Young's the last one I remember who had that belt.
Yeah. And now, halfway through the Spin Cycle show, Austin Aries, the X Division champion, interrupted and asked, why am I not on the show? I'm a champion.
Right.
Leading me to ask, oh, great. Does that mean every diva in the company is going to come out, too? Because they've all fucking got belts.
Right. There's like four of them with belts now. I don't know what the fuck is happening.
I don't know. So, I guess that is one thing, and then the other thing is there's a wrestling show today in Des Moines. Apologize to anyone who listens to this affiliated with the show. I can't make the show, but Hacksaw Jim Duggan is on the card.
Yep.
And I got to thinking, you know, two things. One, TNA's got a goddamn lot of championships, and I know WWE's got two world champs and two secondary champs and a tag title and a women's division and all that.
It's fucking ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. Just as bad as TNA crawling with championships, too.
Yeah, well, they got more than WWE. They're even more ridiculous. So.
That's true. So, back in the good old days, our friend Hacksaw Jim Duggan was once the king of the ring. Now, he was never a champion of any sort in WWF.
No.
He was a U.S. champion in WCW. But during his time in the WWF, he was the king. He was Hacksaw King Duggan for about 6 months or a year or something.
Let me tell you something, brother. We got Hacksaw Jim Duggan with the 2x4, and he's a deadly weapon unto himself, dude.
Oh, man. Somebody was on a Survivor Series kick, huh?
Yeah, and then I stopped watching after 93 because I had to kill myself after that, so I'm actually dead right now.
If you've heard reports of somebody swinging from the barn in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, it's Dusty after a string of Survivor Series.
That's right.
Well, so I was thinking, and I asked Dusty this, you know, back in the good old days, WWF had the world champ, the intercontinental champ, the tag team champ, but they also had the king of the ring.
They did.
And I wonder if that's something that could work today. I'm wondering if we could go back through the history of the king of the ring and how that all worked. Up until they started doing pay-per-views and then stopped doing pay-per-views but still brought back the King of the Ring concept and the successes, the failures, if it's something that would work today still, if they went full bore with it. I guess I'm curious to talk about the idea of a king again in the WWE.
Sure, and I'm down with that. I'm down with old school stuff. Our boy Big Round Wizard was just watching 94 King of the Ring related stuff. So
wow. Now, was he watching the part where Macho Man Randy Savage and Vince McMahon were standing in front of the Velcro board, putting names on the tournament bracket, and doing
probably.
Like,
I didn't talk to him about that.
Get that little piece that said Mabel or Tatanka or whatever. He's like, Tatanka does not advance, and he throws the piece of paper up in the air.
Yes.
And Neville J wins with the little twick with the toes. And McMahon's like, excuse me, a little something with the toes? A trick with the toes. Or a twick with the toes. And then Todd Pettengill gets fed up and cuts the whole thing off.
Yep. Like he has anything better to do, fucking Todd Pettengill.
Who are you to judge, Todd Pettengill?
Right? He's thinking about how many minutes there are left before the pay-per-view starts, you know?
Under 2 minutes. Yeah, okay.
You're
a hack.
Stones there, Todd. Yeah.
I love the part. Now, when you went back and watched these Survivor Series, were these like through your grandma's window maybe grandma's window, your neighbor's window, or did you watch old VHS, or how did you watch these old Survivor Series?
I have the box set for everything through 96 or whatever, you know?
So those don't come with the countdown show.
No, but they're the full version. They're the full unedited version, so they're better.
Ah, cool. Now, I trust, though, that you remember from back in the day with these countdown shows.
Oh, I watched them all whenever I bought
them. Do you recall the 93 version that you're so sick of when the Hearts, you know, that was the year the Hearts were supposed to wrestle Jerry Lawler and his Knights, and it became Shawn Michaels and his Knights?
Mm-hmm.
And Todd Pettengill, during the countdown show, goes out to the crowd and he's like, oh, everybody's having a good time, even this little kid. And ma'am, who are you? She's like, I'm Martha Hart. I'm Owen's wife, and this is his son.
Oh.
How would you feel if you were Todd Pettengill, who was hired by WWF to have product knowledge of WWF?
Yeah.
And you don't know one of your main wrestler's wives?
Right.
Yeah. Like, hi, who are you? I'm Owen Hart's wife. You're going to have a great time.
Quickly move on and then fall into an infinity foot hole.
You are talking to, you're listening to Stunt Granny Audio, home of the biggest Todd Pettengill fan and the biggest Sean Mooney fan in town.
Yes. Sean Mooney's great, though.
I don't know.
Fight it. You can fight it all you want, but it's there, dude. He's the best. So.
Yeah, that 18-minute preamble that he gave Hacksaw Duggan and Nikolai Volkoff at SummerSlam 90. Now, gentlemen, Nikolai Volkoff was once a Soviet Russian, and Hacksaw, you're a proud American. Now, the Orient Express are a couple of Japanese men led by Mr. Fuji, the nefarious one. And I'm like, wow, the time's ticking away.
The clock is bleeding.
Get to the fucking point, Mooney. Christ.
I just love when he's interviewing the Macho King, like, the World Wrestling Federation will climb to any height to get the story. Sarcastic in your voice!
Yeah, that's right. Sarcastic is the word, and something is where I go, whatever he says.
Yeah, whatever. He's coked up. I don't know.
A lot of coke fuel promos back in those days.
There were, dude.
Well, let's go way back in time here, before Hacksaw Duggan was the king, before Macho Man was the king, and WWE was doing King of the Ring as house shows.
Yeah.
You know, we were both kids, but I really don't recall them ever, up until Harley Race, ever making a big deal out of the King of the Ring winners at the house shows on television.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at it right now on Wicca, and it's like Don Morocco in 85 won the tournament over the Iron Sheik.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I don't remember anything about Morocco being king, you know?
Right.
And
being
then,
magnificent wasn't enough.
Yeah. Oh, my God, that was so awesome. Him and Fucci, that was great, dude.
Yes, it was. Brilliant.
They should have played that up more, that he was king. Maybe they did, and I just wasn't watching. I don't
think they did. It's in,
I don't think
over the over the course of history, I don't recall them, you know, even in recalling the history, recalling the history of the King of the Ring, they never talk about Morocco. I mean, I realize what they were trying to do back in the day. They were just trying to draw a house, you know, so they put a gimmick on it. Just the same as having battle royals or any of that other sort of thing. It's just a gimmick to draw a crowd.
Sure,
But, yeah, I mean, it's in some ways, it's actually kind of a shame that they never played it up. I'm getting my computer up and running right now, but correct me if I'm wrong. Did Tito Santana win a King of the Ring at one point?
Yeah, 89.
89, and who did he beat in the finals? Once I get my computer up.
He actually beat Martel.
Yes, that's the whole reason I wanted to bring that one up.
Holy cow.
If for long-time listeners of Stunt Granny Audio that have heard Dusty and I harp about Tito Santana never getting his babyface victory over former tag team partner Rick Martel in any sort of, like, feud-ending or blow-off match, he did get a single victory, and it was for the King of the Ring, but it doesn't mean jack shit in WWF history.
None.
So,
and
I mean,
what
it's a shame.
Remember, they remember all the Martel wins by rolling them up and holding the tights.
Yep.
Everywhere across this godforsaken country.
You know, I've always been surprised when I go back and watch SummerSlam 89, how quickly the Rougeaux music kicks on after they get the win in that six-man tag.
Yeah.
It's almost as though it was already queued up. But it's like literally ding, 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 bow, bow, bow. It's like, wow. You're not even trying to hide it anymore.
Well, they're on the ball. That's it.
Yeah.
I always pictured it like they got two stereos next to each other, one with the baby face, one with the heel music, and the guy sitting next to each one, and you just hit it right away, you know?
You know what? Honestly, one of these days when you and I are running our own wrestling company, we need a little backstage vignette sort of thing. We're like, here, we're introducing you to the inner workings of championship belt, championship wrestling, and here's Tony, he's at the baby face stereo, and here's Larry at the heel stereo.
Right, and it's just like these serious guys sitting there staring at the radio, you know, like, I'm ready.
That'd be the most awesome thing ever.
They're like in
eyes,
yeah.
Yeah, no, we need to make that happen. That's brilliant. Either that or we need to find a way to get a hold of Jim Cornette and have him do that on the Ring of Honor television show.
Oh, my God, that'd be amazing.
Oh, man. So we can kind of fast forward through the idea of King of the Ring at house shows. Because we've got, again, we had, Harley Race was really the first king that I recall being recognized as king in WWF on television. And I guess rumors always had it that they kind of did that as a nod to his, you know, 8 NWA championship wins and his I guess, lineage as such a great wrestler.
Like a lifetime achievement award kind of thing.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah. I mean, from there, the King crown was, I don't know, tell me your opinion on this, because it's, depending on your mood or depending on the time of day or whatever, a person could look at that and think, wow, they're, you know, they're really taking this seriously and they're really going all out with this. And another person might say, this is the most cartoony bullshit.
Right.
He's all of a sudden wearing royal purple trunks and he's wearing a crown and has graduation music. Like, what the hell? What is your opinion on that?
Well, I tend to like it. I tend to, you know, side in favor of it. But, yeah, I can understand the argument against it. It's cartoony WWF stuff, you know?
Right.
But,
it's what you're tuning in for.
If you look at it, like, it's their TV title, You know, it's that number three level title.
Yeah.
And you could headline a C show with it if you wanted to.
Yep.
And
it fluctuated from that level, though. There were times where Randy Savage was, as King, wrestling Hulk Hogan, the world champion.
Sure.
That's probably partly because it was Macho Man Randy Savage, you know. It's not like we're talking about Haku over here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to headline with Duggan versus Hogan, you know.
Right.
Whatever. No.
But you could have Duggan. I guess his big feud at the time was with Macho King and Andre. He was feuding with Andre for a while. That could have legitimately headlined some B-level or C-level shows.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Duggan likes to lay claim, and probably rightfully so, that he and Andre sold out Madison Square Garden once in 89.
Yep.
So depending on who was holding the crown and who they were feuding with, and I guess how well the booking was working at the time, the King headlined and sold out Madison Square Garden once. So, you know, big ups to him. We had that's the other thing about the King's crown is looking at some of the people who held it back in the late 80s and early 90s. You got a Harley Race, like you said, kind of a lifetime achievement thing.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Haku, who's basically a glorified jobber.
Right.
You got Hacksaw Duggan, very popular babyface, who was really never meant to be a champion.
Yeah. Like, this was kind of his peak, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
We're not going to give you the Intercontinental title, so here's the crown kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And really, for a guy like Duggan, he's more cut out for something like that. He's kind of the, you know, to steal a phrase from Dusty Rhodes, he is kind of the common man that, you know, when you see him wear the crown, it's like, all right, you know, the good guy's got one.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Macho King Randy Savage. Here's a guy who had already been world champion once, longest reigning Intercontinental champion for a long time. And then they give him the King's crown. I guess a couple of possible theories on that, and one could be they were trying to give some legitimacy to the King's crown.
He was on his way down, but they didn't want to take him all the way down. Kind of the middle of down. So.
I think, they realized his value as a potential headliner and somebody who needed something, you know, something to carry around like a belt, but didn't want to give him a belt.
Sure.
And honestly, one of the greatest things about his reign as King was the fact that he was at the time being managed by Sensational Sherry, and she got to be the queen.
Yes.
Well, how great is that gimmick?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And, were they great together. Great promos, great interaction.
Yeah.
She'd get in there and, like, choke the guy on the ropes and stuff. I mean, she was awesome.
Yeah. She was legitimately scary for a kid.
Yeah.
A kid.
Mm-hmm.
And here's Randy Savage, who looks like he could fly off the handle at any minute.
Yep.
I mean, that was a pair to draw to, as they say. And then you see the King's crown kind of dissolve when Randy Savage loses to Ultimate Warrior at WrestleMania 7.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't really even know. Again, I guess this is a Wikipedia question or a ProWrestlingHistory.com question. Did they do a 91 King of the Ring? I feel like that was won by Bret Hart, if I remember right.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what are we doing with that? What are we trying to establish when we move it back to the house show circuit and give it to Bret Hart?
Irwin in the finals.
Irwin!
I mean, they were probably just, we used to sell out house shows with this, and it looks like every one of them was at the Providence Civic Center. So
yeah, which is funny. We were talking off air about Undertaker and Marty Jannetty's and the burial and the resurrection and the levitation. I'm pretty sure that happened in Providence too.
It did.
Weird.
And I remember because that stupid fucking Scott Keith joke. Rhode Island isn't Dusty Rhodes in the swimming pool or something.
Oh, so, Jesus.
Yeah,
that's awful.
Funny Skeet. I think this is the first time I've mentioned him in an audio, so.
I think it is.
That's funny.
I think it is. Oh, you know what? I'm going to backtrack. Sorry, I'm going to backtrack just a little bit back to the house show days. It's funny to see that Randy Savage as a babyface won the King of the Ring in 87. And then DiBiase won King of the Ring in 88 in a tournament final rematch against Randy Savage, a rematch from that year's WrestleMania. That's kind of interesting. And hey, Virgil even wrestled in the 88 tournament. He lost to Randy Savage in the first round of the tournament.
That answers a question of mine that I was going to ask at some point in some audio somewhere. Did Virgil ever wrestle while he was with the Million Dollar Man?
And this is, you know, it looked like it was a lot of one-offs. Which is kind of a contradiction when you think about a lot of one-offs.
Right.
I see his name pop up sometimes, but not very often. Look at the crew.
Seemingly declining.
Look at this roster in 1988. I'm going to go through some of the shit. Well, actually, I'll go through everything. DiBiase and Beefcake. Okay, good. Ken Patera, yeah. Nikolai Volkoff, he's a veteran, sure. Ron Bass and the Barbarian, a tag team wrestler.
Yeah.
And then you've got Danny Davis plugged into this tournament against Shawn Michaels. Hercules versus Bad News Brown that ends in a double DQ, I'm sure. That was a real crowd pleaser.
Oh, fuck.
Virgil loses to Randy Savage.
Yeah.
And then here you go. Here's the bottom part of the bracket. These are a bunch of winners right here. Iron Mike Sharp beat Boris Zukov.
What a fucking match that is.
God. And I guarantee the only reason Boris Zukov didn't win the King of the Ring is because his head is so big it couldn't fit a crown. And
right.
The only reason I know that is because Wade Keller hangs out in front of his window.
Right.
And watches him get his hair cut.
And Marty Jannetty against the Canary. So
the penisless Terry Taylor, yep. Man.
Have we talked about that Scott Hall quote?
No.
Hey, Canary. I was talking to some of the New York boys yesterday. Guess who asked about you?
Nobody. That's fucking great. That's such an awesome punchline. Oh, my God. Oh, there's a joke. Oh, man, I hope I remember this. And I hope you've heard it. If I can't think of it, and I'm about to just butcher it.
Go ahead.
It was an Undertaker joke. Undertaker made a joke about, I know what it was. It was on The Last Call with Scott Hall, the latest episode, where Glenn Jacobs was doing Diesel and Rick Bogner was doing Razor.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody comes in the locker room at the time and they're like, hey, anyone got a disposable razor? And Undertaker points at Rick Bogner.
That's great. I've never heard that before.
Oh, that's fucking great. Scott Hall, for as fucked up as he is, has some good stories if he remembers them. Let's see. King of the Ring moves into the pay-per-view era, and, I mean, I was just thinking about this the other day. King of the Ring 93 was actually a pretty damn good pay-per-view.
Oh, I fucking love it. I love everything about that show.
Yeah. Even given the skeleton crew that they had to work with, you know, they had Mr. Hughes in the tournament, who I love, but still, you know, if you look at the big picture.
There's one thing I don't like about that show, but never mind.
Okay.
Mr. Hughes I really like, but he's not a crowd pleaser by any imagination of stretch. So.
No, yeah, he's not a King of the Ring qualifier either, except for he was this year.
Right, no danger to win it.
Right. Ultimately, though, you got Bret Hart winning the thing after wrestling three great matches. So, to me, it seems like another case where you've got a former world champion who you kind of need a slot for him. You kind of need to reestablish the crown as something important. It puts him directly into a new feud with Jerry Lawler. Kind of a guy who's working his way away from the world title, but they don't want to push him all the way down the ladder.
Man, you could feel things changing on that pay-per-view. They let Lawler get heel heat as the show went off the air.
Yep, that I thought about.
Never happened during Hogan's heyday. Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, no. The closest we'd ever come to that would be like Survivor Series 87 when Andre and his team won.
Sure.
Only after Hogan was counted out.
Yep.
You know, but yeah, what an interesting ending to the card. And I guess that, you know, it forwarded things along for Brett, and it reestablished the King of the Ring tournament and the King's Crown.
Mm-hmm.
But from there, you've got Owen Hart in 94, you've got Mabel in 95,
mm-hmm.
Steve Austin in 96, Triple H in 97. You got a string of guys who they're trying to establish as next tier or main event guys.
Yeah, they didn't really do that with Bret Hart, but after that, they used it as a vehicle to push guys upwards, or
yep.
try to. Mm-hmm.
Yep. We've talked about this 10,000 times. Everybody's heard us talk about it. We've discussed Mabel as King of the Ring in 95.
Sure.
Anybody in here, this is kind of a weird question, but now I'm looking at the tournament brackets and kind of getting a better idea, a reminder of who was in the tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
I think they made the right choice for sure with Owen Hart in 94. I mean, he's one of the guys that really took that gimmick and ran with it as far as he possibly could.
Yeah, and 94 was, like, all year they were establishing Owen as a serious guy. I mean, that was the start of him being a serious singles wrestler, because up
yeah.
to that point, they just used him in crappy tag teams.
Right. You know, in 95, Mabel, you can't go wrong with Steve Austin in 96, especially in hindsight, but... Even at the time, it's like you can't disagree that Steve Austin was the right choice.
Yep.
I guess my question, and I can ask this about pretty much every year, you know, Ken Shamrock in 98 and Billy Gunn in 99. And yeah. This is a yes or no question. Are there other people who would have benefited from this better or more greatly or would have, I mean, you got fucking Billy Gunn. Come on.
Right.
What the fuck did he ever do except lose at the next pay-per-view?
I would have gone probably with Road Dogg. Hindsight
yeah.
being what it is,
yeah.
Road Dogg was very close to becoming a number two to Steve Austin on the babyface side.
He was a hell of a merchandise seller, that's for sure.
Give him, and he was over with the crowd and everything. They were, like, ready to take him. Give him the King of the Ring and use that to catapult him, or try
yep.
to.
Let's go over this again. How did you feel about Rhodey in 95?
Rhodey?
Yeah.
I didn't take him seriously in the
yeah.
in the tournament. Yeah.
Yep.
They never really used him as a wrestler. He was sort of like Johnny Polo wrestling, you know?
Yeah, really.
He felt the same way towards Johnny Polo being in the tournament. Like, okay.
Yeah, or like Virgil in 88.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There you go.
Yeah, totally ill-fitting. I guess my question was, are there guys who would have benefited from wins? I mean... And you got to give, you know, consider the time and the place and everything, but you've got like, should or could have all day long, I guess, but you know, Rocky Maivia loses to Ken Shamrock, you know, whoops, in hindsight, they've done something differently there. Or, you know, again, we've talked about 95 till we're blue in the face. I love the idea of Road Dogg in 99.
Yeah.
You know, if you really want to look at it from a modern day perspective, Road Dogg and Billy Gunn have been going out and doing the independents for the last year as the New Age Outlaws.
Mm-hmm.
Road Dogg was the one who was just called back up to WWE as an agent a couple of months ago, not Billy Gunn.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's no more glue coming out of that horse.
Yeah. Beat
They've
it
had
as you might.
Billy Gunn.
Yeah, so. Old Elmer Gunn.
Yeah.
Gosh, let's see. In 2000, you got Kurt Angle, and you kind of have to have Kurt Angle as your King of the Ring.
Sure, that one makes sense. Mm-hmm.
He's one of the guys who, I mean, he got over so quickly as a heel.
Yep.
And he was so good that how could you deny it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure it was that year, though. Let's see. What a weird year. Man, I'm looking at this tournament bracket, and I'm trying to remember exactly which matches were on the pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the quarterfinals and semifinals and finals were on the pay-per-view.
I think
if that's the case, you've got Kurt Angle versus Chris Jericho, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
You got Crash Holly versus Bull Buchanan. I mean, that's just garbage.
Yeah.
And here you go. Here's what killed me. That's right. I remember watching this live, and this just ripped my heart out. Rikishi beats Chris Benoit, and Val Venus beats Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody wanted Guerrero versus Benoit, and boy.
Of
course. Oh, they got swerved.
Douchebag.
Woo.
Nah. Edge in 2001. I don't know about tell me what you thought about Edge back then. I'm like, I thought they were just trying to push him down our throats a little bit too quickly as a baby face.
Yeah, that was probably a case where they were hoping it would stick, and it kind of didn't. Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
He's always been better as a heel, I feel like.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hell yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he kind of, I mean, man, as a main event heel from 06 to basically, you know, about a year ago. Just what a tremendous heel.
Oh, yeah.
Brock Lesnar in 2002, it kind of, in hindsight, looked like, you know, just they're just pushing him through the progression of things, you know.
Right. I have no problem with that, I don't think.
No, not at all. You knew he was going to be a beast, so you debut him, you give him a King of the Ring, and a couple months later, you give him the world title.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Done. Here's where you and I start to shed some tears. They didn't even have a King of the Ring tournament for like 3 years here.
Yeah.
And you and I have always been big fans of this concept.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see a
reason to get rid of it. It wasn't hurting anything, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Even if you didn't like it, I mean, it's better than having just a generic pay-per-view with generic matches, you know?
Right, which is pretty much all they have these days anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Oh, bummer. Soli.org, where I go for all my rosters, only goes up to 1998.
I know, that pisses me off. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to see who else was on the roster around like that 2004, 2005. If nothing else, at least it saved us from having, like, Kenzo Suzuki as the King of the Ring.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, or Rene Dupree.
Yeah, probably done that.
And then they just kind of brought it back as a TV gimmick every couple of years. Booker T wins in 06, and I love the King Booker gimmick. I hate to say it, I can't remember what your opinion of the King Booker gimmick was.
It was fucking fantastic.
Awesome.
That's for an opinion, yes. Mm-hmm.
Good, I love it. Man, now that I think about it, if you look at like a 2004, you've got like Randy Orton and Batista.
Yep.
You know, there are some guys that I think would have maybe they would have benefited from having that King's Crown. Maybe the kingship itself would have benefited from being, you know, held by one of these type of guys.
Wasted opportunity.
It seems like that's actually, I hate to say it, I think the majority of the King of the Ring winners were a wasted opportunity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maybe it splits right down the middle. I don't know. As far as, again, you got like Bret and Owen, and then you've got Mabel.
Yeah. Right.
You got Austin and Helmsley, and then you got Shamrock and Gunn.
Right.
So.
Angle, yes. Ed, no. Lesnar, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm half and half.
Yep. The King Booker, though, that was fantastic. That was so funny.
Loved it. Mm-hmm.
I feel like in 2008 that they had already given up on Steven Regal years earlier.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they only gave him the King's Crown because he has an English accent.
Right. Or more to the point, they were never really into him.
Yeah, exactly.
They never gave him a consistent push, you know?
No. They're just not that into you.
Just, yeah, here and there token pushes. Kind
yeah. Of. Oh, my God. If you look back through the roster of 2004.
No, but I will.
Pardon me while I read silently for a minute. Every once in a while, I'll get to a name here like Eugene.
Oh, okay.
Or Rosie. Maven was still around.
Oh my God.
Here's Tommy Dreamer. Is this seriously 2004? Yeah, it is. Tyson Tomko, Rene Dupree, Sylvain Grenier, Rodney Mack, Simon Dean, Gene Snitsky. Maybe it's for the best that they didn't have a King of the Ring at the time.
Right? King Snitsky, dude.
I'd buy it for a quarter.
I'd ask for change back.
Oh, man. That's terrible. There's Kenzo. Luther Reigns. Wow, I've had peas before.
Yes!
Give me some of that turkey. I had peas before.
My favorite part is when... Everybody's filling up their plates, and Taz is stuffing his fat fucking face.
Just picking, picking right out of the buffet line.
And he just shrugs and keeps eating.
Yep. Taz is like, I ain't got a free meal in weeks. Now I get a hot lunch. That's great.
Yeah, I love that whole segment.
That's so awesome. I'm going to go back and watch that here right now. Man, has Daniel Bryan ever beaten Alberto Del Rio? Ever?
No.
I hope somebody someday can point me to a time where that happened, because King of the Ring 2010, in the quarterfinals, Del Rio advances over Daniel Bryan. Like a fucking permanent whipping boy.
He is.
Jeez. I've had peas. Whoops. Peas. B apostrophe F O. Yep, there it is.
Yeah.
He's souffle. Yep. Had peas before. Let's see. Oh.
Come on, Junior.
Yeah.
It didn't ever occur to you, Big Show, that not everybody feels the same way about Thanksgiving as you do.
Aww.
Me, I hate it, because I never had no Thanksgiving.
Poor guy.
Every holiday I can remember was spent fighting, on the run, or in prison.
Well, that just sounds like poor life, crazy.
23 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Well, nonetheless.
Do people have any idea what that's like?
Yeah, 2,478 days.
Right, he is whistling Dixie the Nail.
I had no family come and visit me.
Now, sooner or later. Sooner or later, he's going to get some food.
The only food I ever had was the same bread and spoiled meat day in and day out.
He's got a really nice suit, though, here.
You know, you're a bunch of damn fools. People don't know what real problems are.
He's right.
First problem you got?
First world problem.
I had to worry about staying alive.
That's right.
This is becoming a long segment, but we get a payoff.
Oh, it's long.
Thanksgiving is some excuse to give thanks. Because I thank myself every day for saving my own neck.
I thank myself every day, too.
But I tell you what, if you're inviting everybody, I'm just going to go on ahead and invite myself.
Well, you're already invited.
Yeah. Good for him.
Yeah. Take a stand, Luther.
Yeah. Total baby face in this situation.
He is. He really is. Oh, here we go. He's perusing the selection.
You're going to serve me? Give me some of this turkey. Some of that mashed potato. Let me get some of that peas. I had peas before.
I've had peas before.
Why did he feel the need to say that?
I don't fucking know. What a weirdo.
I know, right?
I'll have peas.
He desires peas on his plate because he recognizes them.
Yeah.
Let's analyze that.
Can you just picture him like fucking Terminator? Like, he sees these round green things on the table, like the text comes up in his brain. Shape food recognition : peas. Now take that and put the king's crown on top of it. How awesome would that have been?
Oh my god.
All right, so we've talked about, oh my god, we've gone over the long history, the storied history of King of the Ring.
So
some of the people,
we got to talk about going grocery shopping.
Oh yeah. There are a lot of people at the grocery store on a Saturday, probably just as many as there are on a Sunday. I get very short with people on occasions like this where I'm, like, standing and waiting for them. They've got their cart on one side of the aisle, and they're standing on the opposite side of the aisle.
Mm-hmm.
And they're lollygagging. And I go to Trader Joe's for my groceries, which our Trader Joe's is a small version of one. And so there's really only a left lane and a right lane and a center lane. There aren't any passing lanes. There aren't any fast lanes at this place.
Right, right.
And so when I get frickin' Joan the old hag parking her cart on one side of the frozen food section while she's searching for corn on the other side.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. And I get fucking Lizzie the lame-ass lollygagger who's trying to go through the center lane but isn't really trying all that goddamn hard.
Right.
And I get stuck behind the whole thing like the caboose. I get very short with people.
Yes.
And one of the guys who works at Trader Joe's was like, he was like, dude, you got to make your move now. And I just kind of shot him this look like, you son of a bitch. Like, it's your fault. You work here.
Yeah, it's his goddamn fault.
Yeah. And then so I take my groceries out. I got my
plan. There should be like a gatekeeper.
Yeah.
You're going to lollygag, you go to the other fucking store, you know?
That's right. Yeah, you go to Walmart or you go to fucking Hy-Vee where you belong.
Yeah, Walmart is where these people belong, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, someplace where they're free to roam.
Where, like, the gentle, soothing tones of Daughtry plays in the background.
Dude, this is the best part. This is the best part about me walking into Trader Joe's today. As soon, literally, as the doors opened up for me, I hear the bow of Huey Lewis in the News. If this is it.
Nice.
It was beautiful. For every wrongdoing that these assholes did to me as I was walking through the store, and I walked out with my three bags of groceries. I put them in my car, and then I came back to where the front they leave the carts at the front of the store on the outside of the store. And I come back, and I'm going to put my cart in with the rest of the carts. And here's some middle-aged lady just standing there, just standing by her cart, just like kind of rifling through her purse or something.
Oh,
and and the woman that she's with is standing in front of the only other row of carts with a whole case full, 12 bottles full of wine.
What?
And I'm like, I know where you old hags are going tonight.
Yeah.
You're going to go home, and you're going to drink wine, and you're going to watch Lifetime, and you're going to be in my fucking way.
Oh, my God.
And the one woman who's rifling through her purse looks at me, and she's like, oh, am I in your way? And I think I looked at her for a second, and then I just kind of looked away in disgust, and she was like, I am in your way. I've been in everybody's way all day. And I'm just like, I hope you're taking my lack of response as agreement that you are a giant piece of shit and need
right.
to go home and finish off at least six of these bottles of wine and then go swing in the barn.
You've been fucking ruining people's days all day, you know?
Yep.
You can't
and
laugh that off. Like,
yeah, you do it with a goddamn smile.
Right.
Oh, gosh. And then, so Trader Joe's is infamous for their free samples, and today's free samples, I shit you not, was some sort of like cake batter or cookie dough, something that attracts middle-aged women who love wine.
Oh, of course. Of course.
So as I'm making – I'm actually – and here's the point where I'm making my way through the biggest, widest open part of the store.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to just make a beeline toward the sliced turkey. And in my way In my way are three girls, probably between the ages of 17 and 22.
Oh, no.
And behind their cart is a woman who's slightly older, maybe 30, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
In her mom jeans.
Yeah.
Eating the free sample of the cake batter cookie dough and literally just standing there licking the spoon.
Oh, no.
And I can't get around her, past her, and in between her and, like, the pallets of whatever else they have out to just get my sliced turkey.
That's so gross. Oh.
And and so I stand there, and I just kind of let out a little excuse me, and she doesn't budge. And finally, one of the girls she's with looks at me, smiles, looks at her, and says, "You might want to stop licking the spoon and let this gentleman pass." And I turn to the woman in question and I go, "Lady, if I had a spoon, I'd be licking it too." So I hope I've shamed this wino.
Yeah. Well,
you're
kinder and gentler than I am.
Nah, you know, I'm getting to the point of Michael Douglas in a short sleeve shirt with a baseball bat. I'm like a hair's breadth away from falling down.
No, the last time I was at Walmart, did I tell you this story?
No, tell me.
Oh, the woman, see, we make eye contact, right? She absolutely knows I'm coming through, you know?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Parks her cart sideways, you know what I mean?
Yep.
I had a split second to react, and I decided, you know, okay, fuck it. I gave up being nice a long time ago. I gave that up for Lent when I was like seven. So.
A lifetime of Lent.
So I just plowed her cart over, you know?
Nice.
Like, I had nowhere to go. I had to, like, either stop or do that. Like, I'm not going to stop for this stupid fucking fat, useless piece of shit middle-aged woman.
Awesome.
Why should I?
That's great. Did she have a reaction, a response?
I didn't stick around to look. I had to go get some lunch meat, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm doing my business here, trying to get some honey ham, so.
I've got shit to do. And,
yeah.
And, yeah. And these people are in the goddamn way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Unreal. Just the lack of any sort of civility.
And,
you know what?
And they don't deserve any... they don't deserve respect back. You shouldn't say
no.
"excuse me."
No.
You know, yeah. Like, they don't react to "excuse me, please."
They obviously don't. We are prime examples of that. We've said "excuse me," and they don't excuse us.
Right. No. They're too busy in their own fucking world where they're the fucking star of their movie. And their movie has to have a 10-minute soliloquy of them licking a fucking spoon. So, whatever. Just
that's awesome.
Women
it's
are
like it's like watching Sean Mooney try to interview somebody.
I wouldn't wish it on Saddam Hussein. You know,
Saddam Hussein. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you know, brother.
Oh, so much coke.
I feel like the statute of limitations is gone on that. We can talk about now on just how coke-riddled.
I'm positive that after WrestleMania 7 that Sergeant Slaughter didn't hit Hogan with a flamethrower. I think Hogan was freebasing and set himself on fire like Richard Pryor did.
Oh, shit. That reminds me. Did you? Speaking of Walmart and freebasing.
Okay.
I don't remember where it was, but this woman got caught at Walmart. She was mixing chemicals to put in her meth. And she
okay.
was in the store for, like, 7 hours.
Oh, Lord. Was she in the
and
store for 7 hours?
She, she kept wandering around the store to the same spots, you know?
Oh, my God, yeah.
So that's how they caught her. Like, oh, what's going on
that's,
with her?
Now, so was she? Did she spend 7 hours mixing it? Or
mixing
did she spend... I was going to say, did she spend like 10 minutes mixing it, 2 minutes taking it, and then 7 hours marching around the store at full speed, moving entire shelves out of her way?
My first thought was, I guarantee somebody else has done this successfully in the past and not gotten caught. Mm-hmm. But according to the story, she was just mixing it and didn't know what the hell she was doing. So.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah, I believe that.
Right.
Let's see. I wonder if I can find this easily and quickly. God, I love the grocery store.
I'd rather talk about this than whatever we were talking about for wrestling. I'll wind up
the wrestling talk by saying, and you can agree or disagree with me on this, I feel like WWF, WWE has done 3 things when it comes to King of the Ring. 1, they've done it right. 2, they've done it wrong. And 3, mm-hmm. there are times where they just didn't do anything with it at all.
Sure.
Does that sound accurate to you?
That's about right, sure.
I mean, I would say, like, they did Owen Hart right. At least to their credit with Mabel, they made him the main event of SummerSlam.
I will always say their heart was in the right place with that. I totally understand the logic of that one. That's fine, you know?
Yep, yep.
It didn't work out. Oh, well.
Yeah. 99, I would say they did it wrong, big time wrong.
Yep. Well, everything they did in 99 was wrong.
Yeah, that was a shit-tastic year. We've discussed that.
No.
I would say the William Regal year, they did that basically wrong.
Yep.
And then there are years where really, like Stone Cold Steve Austin, they didn't really do anything with him as King of the Ring.
Oh.
So I guess that's just a push, you know, that's neither here nor there.
An excuse for him to win a couple matches, basically.
Right, yeah. Let's talk about some times where they did it right. When you think of, if I say they did the King of the Ring right, who are some other people that you think of?
Okay, well, Angle, Owen and Brett.
And I'm thinking Randy. I'm thinking Randy Savage too.
Austin, but yeah, no, Austin was just sort of a thing that happened. Triple H, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. I as the blue blood, yeah, that makes sense. I got to put Randy Savage in there.
Oh, absolutely.
To me, he's the prototype, and it's up to everybody else to follow that act.
Yep.
So that being said, if let's say that like he was done right, let's say Owen was somebody who was done right.
Mm-hmm.
2 questions based on that. 1, who makes a better king, babyface or heel?
Oof. I guess it depends.
Yeah,
it depends. But generally, generically speaking, a heel.
Yeah, it's a cocky sort of thing. It's a
like if
it's
you
a
say king, WWF King of the Ring, the first 3 people that come to mind are Owen, Macho Man, and Booker.
Yeah.
You know,
three heels.
Cocky and into it and rubbing it in people's faces and stuff like that. So
yeah. There are times where it's right for a babyface to win.
Yeah, like you said, Duggan. Duggan's a good example of a babyface that could carry it off.
Exactly.
In another life, Dusty Rhodes would have been a perfect king.
Yeah. Or, you know, what if a Junkyard Dog, let's say, had gotten the win over Harley Race and it was for the king's crown.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
A nice story is told, right?
Sure.
So given that it is probably a case-by-case thing, if WWE were to actually do it right, and if they were to bring back the King's Crown, who are maybe 2 or 3 guys nowadays that would benefit from it, and considering benefiting from it being like maybe a step up the ladder or just a good story for them or something like that, who are some good King contenders these days?
Dolph Ziggler immediately comes to mind.
Yep,
Oh, looking over the roster. You know, somebody like an Evan Bourne on the babyface side.
Okay.
As a next step up kind of thing. Brodus Clay in the Mabel role.
Oh, yeah. Dude, if Brodus Clay won King of the Ring, he would look even more like King Hippo from Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Dude, that needs to happen.
That'd be huge. Yeah, I completely agree with Ziggler. I think he'd be a great king. I think at one point when we all thought Jack Swagger had, well, I shouldn't say all, thought Jack Swagger had some potential, you know, maybe until he opened his mouth and showed us all what a dipshit he is.
Right. R-Truth would be fun.
That could be very interesting. I could see him turning into a royal type of blue blood.
Yeah, sure.
Total
hypocrisy. That would be great.
Yeah. One thing I'd like to see is to get Alberto the hell out of the world title scene. But considering they like to play up that, like, you know, rich, whatever, lineage thing, whatever the fuck is, I don't even know what his gimmick is. It's my destiny, my dynasty, whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever. King Alberto, fine. Just that it gets him away from the title, I hope.
That could actually be really good. Sure.
It could be good. Sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm kind of looking up and down the roster, and those look like the prime candidates.
Ricardo as his servant or something? Yeah, that'd be,
yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. Hey, here you go. Wade Barrett. He's even English.
Okay.
You know, they still don't have any clue what to do with him, so why not go full bore with the British gimmick and just make him a king?
Ted DiBiase trying to buy the crown.
Awesome. Yeah, I guess that, you know, they could do it, and they could do it well. There are a few things they are doing well these days, but it's got the potential to maybe make a comeback if they wanted to do it right in 2012.
Sure. The last king was Sheamus.
Yeah, 2010, and that was pretty iffy. I don't really know about that king reign. If that was, I didn't think it was all that hot.
I'm not going to write home about it. Why would I write home about anything?
Yeah, I've always wondered about that saying too. Like, I get it, but you know, where are you that you see something and it immediately causes you to pick up pen and paper and buy a stamp?
Right? Well, especially in this day and age, everybody has a telephone. You don't need to write home. We can retire that cliche now.
Yeah. When I think of writing home, I think of summer camp.
Okay, sure.
And, like, what the hell ever happens at summer camp that makes you want to write home about it? I made you a macaroni necklace. No. I don't know.
It's really nifty this year. Well,
nifty. Awesome. Yeah, honestly, I think you're right. The grocery conversation's pretty entertaining.
Yeah, it is. It is.
God,
anything to add there? Any fun grocery stories?
You know what? I'll tell you this off the bat. Going grocery shopping sapped my energy.
Yeah.
It took it out of me, you know, in ways that I didn't think it would. I thought, for some reason, I honestly thought that Saturday was going to be a good day to go.
Mm-hmm.
I have debunked that myth.
There really is. Mm-hmm.
I, you know what? I've had good luck on Mondays.
Okay.
Sundays are obviously horrible. But I've had good luck on Mondays before. But my God, just the lack of consideration. I'm not the least bit surprised that I saw this. At Trader Joe's, they sell lots of different wine. If we haven't established that they sell wine to winos, then that's part of what they do.
Now, describe this Trader Joe's. Is this like just a home country-style little shop, or what is this?
Here's the best way to describe Trader Joe's. It's a chain. It's a chain, and it's starting to expand. It's in the coasts, and now it's starting to come here. It looks small. It acts small. It looks homey. It acts homey. Everybody's helpful and nice, and as in the people who work there. Legitimately, like, the people that work there are helpful and nice.
Sure.
Almost everything they sell is their own label. They probably 95% of their stuff is Trader Joe's made food, and 5% of it is something else.
Okay.
They really don't carry Post or General Mills or Kellogg's cereal. They don't carry Tyson chicken, thank God. That sort of thing.
Sure.
They sell a lot of wine. And one of the end caps on their aisle, their big display, like, was a huge pyramid of wine. It was like a layer of wine and then a smaller layer on top and until the fucking god, the Sun Ra, was like, you know, we're worshiping the god of champagne and wine.
Right.
And some fucking asshole who's standing at the end of one of the long-ass lines, he's holding his basket, and he's just swinging around like a goddamn five-year-old.
Yeah.
Not paying a lick of attention to anything. Hits one of the bottles of wine, knocks it on the ground, shatters it everywhere.
Absolutely. I saw this. This Stevie Wonder saw this coming.
So, of course, the help just swarms, and they get out the big machine, and they clean the shit up, and they don't ask them to pay for it. It's not a, you know, you break it, you buy it sort of place.
Sure.
But I'm like, that's just part and parcel of this whole thing. I can barely get in the door because an asshole's standing there trying to put their cart back while other assholes are standing in their way.
Yeah.
I can't get through the produce because everyone's got their cart at a diagonal. Can't get past the samples because everyone's standing there licking the spoon.
Yeah.
Can't get my goddamn sliced turkey because women come there in groups of five.
Yeah.
Can't put my cart back because of the line of people who have been accruing to try to put their carts back because of the fucking spoon liquor.
Right.
Oh, my God. And then some asshole bumps into the wine and knocks down a bottle, and there's glass shattered everywhere. And this is even better. As I'm going through the aisle to try to pick out my foods, there's a woman in front of me, and at every turn, she makes every turn and ends up in front of me with her, like, four-year-old kid, who she has dressed in some sort of weird, like, fur jacket, by the way.
Okay.
Sending him down the wrong path. She's like, okay, now get the lasagna noodles. And so he's standing there like a dummy, like touching them all and like slapping them and stuff. And he's like, he grabs for one, and then he grabs the other one right next to it that's exactly like it. And she's like, good job, honey, good job. I'm like, train your little future shopper on someone else's watch because you're in my way.
Right.
So this guy knocks over this bottle of wine, and what does this woman do but just cavalierly walk right over, rolls her cart right over it, and her little kid walks right through the broken glass.
Sure.
I'm like, you care so much about your fucking whole grain shit that you're just letting your four-year-old kid in his fur jacket step over all this broken glass, you fucking wino. So that's actually how I meant to describe Trader Joe's.
Okay.
It's based on the clientele.
Yep.
Yep. And then there's me, the dipshit, who goes there and should know better. Just go to Super Target,
you
dummy.
Should, dude.
That's what Super Target's made for. Freaking younger girls and less winos.
Right. Oh, God.
In fact, I think that's the name of the next Hold for Swank record.
How is Hold for Swank doing? I mean, you just had a secret business meeting with Max.
I did. Max and I had a good lunch. Hold for Swank is slow but sure.
Okay.
Got about 12 brand new songs in the hopper. We just need to make some money to go record them. And, yeah.
Okay.
We'll be back at it hot and heavy.
Nice.
Yes, sir.
And you are still a four-piece?
We're still a four-piece. It's working out really well. I'm really happy that we got that second guitar player, and
yeah.
I'm very happy that he's as good of a musician as he is, too. It's making my life a lot easier, and it makes it fun to play.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good.
I really feel like the Flaming Lips only got good when they added a second guitar player.
Yeah, it fills out the sound, and it actually, as a musician, gives me something to, like, look forward to, and something to play off of, and an excuse to get better.
Sure.
So that's good.
Okay.
Remind the people, you were in a band in high school, were you not?
I was in a band in high school.
And remind me again the name of this band that you were in when you were in high school.
Morning Wood.
Morning Wood, that's correct, yes.
Yes.
Yes. I too was in a band in high school. We were called Dirty Laundry.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. So in another life, we may have been at the same high school and played gigs together.
Right. I have a feeling if we had gone to the same high school, we probably would have ended up in the same band at some point.
Actually, that's true. We probably just would have skipped all the middlemen and bought a drum machine.
Right, yeah.
You had Dusty on bass, Eric on guitar, and a drum machine.
We could never find a good drummer.
Yeah, I have a good drummer now, and I've had, you know, mediocre drummers.
Yeah, you sure have. Yeah.
But, yeah, they're always the hardest people to find and the hardest ones to hang on to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wanna go back to wrestling just for one second.
Go ahead.
I'm surfing through YouTube right now. I was really kind of hoping to find the interview where Sean Mooney interviewed Hacksaw and Nikolai, and I couldn't find it.
Okay.
I happened to run across a match between Demolition Smash and Jim the Anvil Neidhart from something called SummerSlam Fever 1990.
Yep.
I'm actually looking forward to watching this match, but at first I had to cringe because it's a 12.5-minute clip.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I want to watch that match, but I want to watch that 4-minute match. I don't want to watch that 12-minute match.
Right.
So we'll see how that turns out for everybody.
I remember liking it, and this was like they kept giving Smash singles matches here and there as a test run.
Yes.
They knew it was coming at some point.
Yeah,
what I
think is bad health.
Now that we're talking about it, when Demolition turned heel again.
Yes.
In like 91, I want to see some matches of them from 91, other than that shitty WrestleMania match I've watched 5,000 times.
Yeah, I fast forward through that match because I don't see a point in watching it.
You know, where they had that weird music, that doom.
Yeah.
Doom.
Yeah. Yeah, the music that demolished all of my good memories of the tag team.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we should go on a hunt and find some Demolition squashes from, well, at that point they were probably on Wrestling Challenge and not Superstars.
Let's talk about this a second.
Okay.
They never did Legion of Doom versus Demolition one-on-one on pay-per-view. They should have done that at WrestleMania 7.
Yes.
They should have done Heart Foundation versus the Rockers at WrestleMania 7, and they could have done Hogan versus Warrior Part 2 at WrestleMania 7. Although, if they had done that, what do you do with Savage? Your thoughts?
Okay, let's see. I was actually thinking about this the other day. What show did I watch? Oh, I know. I got on my Shawn Michaels Heartbreak and Triumph DVD, and I was watching the tag title match where the top rope broke. And the Rockers beat the Heart Foundation 2 out of 3 falls, but they never counted it in the books because they never aired the match on TV.
Yeah.
So in thinking about that, that kind of derailed history a little bit because you fast forward and you got the Rockers versus the Orient Express opening the card at the Royal Rumble 91 in one of my absolute favorite matches of all time.
Same here. Mm-hmm.
That probably would not have happened if the Rockers were tag team champions.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then you go all the way to WrestleMania, and what you get is Heart Foundation versus the Nasty Boys for the tag team titles.
Yep.
You probably wouldn't have had that either. If I were a betting man, I would bet the Rockers would still have the tag team belts at WrestleMania.
Sure.
I would bet that they would probably want to put the belts on the Nasty Boys, and that would be the match that we would have.
Sure.
But then you wouldn't have the story of Jimmy Hart, "No, I know all your weaknesses" thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, okay, so having said all of that, let's see. So we talked about Savage, Hogan Warrior and Savage. Yeah, the thing is, like, they could have had it, and they should have had it, the Hogan Warrior rematch.
Sure.
I think they were thinking that they were going to have it when they were under the assumption that WrestleMania was going to be at the L.A. Sports Coliseum, or whatever they called it, Coliseum, 100,000 people. They probably honestly figured, probably figured Hogan and Warrior 2 would sell out 100,000 seat Coliseum.
Yes.
I highly doubt that.
I do too, but it would have given them a better chance than Hogan's Slaughter.
Yes. They forced the Slaughter thing on us based solely on the war that America was in at the time.
That whole part of history seems really spatulated in.
Yes.
Slaughter thing.
Yes. And so I think they would have been perfectly content with undercard Sergeant Slaughter feuding with the Nikolais and Hacksaws of the world.
Hacksaw, Nikolai, yep.
And he honestly probably would have gotten jobbed out within a year or innocuously turned babyface. No big deal.
Yep.
They felt they at some point in the scheme of things, or probably around like December, January, they realized that they could capitalize or attempt to on this Iraq war as it was ramping up. And they cut off their nose to spite their face.
Yes.
They forced Slaughter way higher on the card than he should have been.
Exactly.
They ruined a perfectly good Hogan Warrior rematch that would have, like you said, had a better chance to sell out the Coliseum.
Yes.
But as far as where that leaves Savage, that's a really good question. It's obvious
like,
that at that point...
I keep coming back to it. Like, yeah, I would probably rather have Hogan Warrior. But what about Savage? I just keep coming back to it. Like, what else is there for him to do in that spot?
To me, it's I think it's obvious that they were preparing to let him go away for a while. Savage needed time off. They were going to let him retire. They, I imagine, would have done something to let him do that.
Sure.
When it comes to Savage, honestly, they fell into it, luckily. They fell into something good because they got to do the Elizabeth thing. He got to turn babyface. He got sympathy. When he came back, it was great. All that good stuff.
Yeah.
That was lucky. The unlucky part was that they sold 15,000 tickets to an event that they were hoping to sell 100,000 to.
Right.
WWF 1991 roster, I'm just giving it the quick look over.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not really seeing anybody else that Savage could have wrestled.
I mean, that's the problem. Slaughter transitions easily down the card. Duggan didn't even have a match on that show, so there you go, you know?
Right, yeah, and I mean, a Duggan-Savage match would have just been a retread.
Yeah, no.
No, not so much.
He deserves something bigger than that.
You know, I guess, you know, honestly, here's what I think probably could have and would have happened.
Go ahead.
In some way, shape, or form. I can't, like, plan this out in my head this quickly, but.
Sure.
The Jake the Snake, Rick Martel blinding thing happened, like, in the summer. The late summer of 90.
Yep.
The blow off was basically around Survivor Series after Survivor Series. That could have been the end of it.
Okay.
And honestly, Jake could have done something with Randy Savage.
Mm.
But because they had to squeeze in Slaughter to the main event with Hogan, that shoved Warrior down, so they put him with Savage because they know Savage can get a good match out of Warrior, which means they have to try really hard to extend the Jake the Snake blinding angle by putting a blindfold on both of them.
Right.
I really don't think that was in the long-term plans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jake had really long feuds, like every year.
He did. His feud with Ted DiBiase, I mean, granted, he was on the shelf for 6 months, but his feud with DiBiase was a long one.
Andre was a long one.
Yep.
Martel was a long one.
Yep.
And then that brings me to 92, which, again, is the glue coming out of the horse for 8,000 years. But how about Hogan versus Flair? How about Sid versus Undertaker and Jake versus Macho Man on that show?
How hard would that have been?
Yeah.
But I still have yet to hear one reason why they didn't go with Hogan Flair that resonated with me enough to remember what the rationale was.
Okay.
Was it seriously? Did they just not think that it could sell out the Hoosier Dome?
Give me a break, dude.
Yeah, that's horse shit. That match would have sold out anywhere.
Anywhere.
So, yeah. No, what you just laid out would have been much more legit. It would have made a lot more sense at the time.
And then you turn Sid heel after the show.
Yep. Yeah, how easy is that?
Him turning heel, Undertaker turning face right around that time. Easy.
Yep.
Easy.
However, again, the one thing that they lucked themselves into was a fantastic match with Ric Flair and Randy Savage.
Absolutely. Beautiful chaos that match is.
Yeah, oh yeah. In that case, I would not want to see history change just because of that match.
Not at all.
I
could do without Skinner taking on Owen.
Yeah, oh my God.
So
the Alligator Man.
That match, yeah.
Yeah. That was an interesting show in that some of the guys who got singles wins, like Owen Hart, they purposely put him in a singles match on the show. Tatanka, he had made his debut like 2 months earlier on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And if you watch this match where he beats Martel, the telling part is Bobby Heenan's reaction. We'd seen Tatanka beat probably 8 jobbers by that point. And
sure.
Then Bobby Heenan's like, Tatanka beat Martel?
Right.
So he's trying to oversell it, to make it look like, uh-oh, this guy's something special.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of interesting to watch that.
Oh, yeah.
And then had the British Bulldog Berserker match happen like it was supposed to, I assume that British Bulldog would have gotten his singles win.
Sure, absolutely.
Do you remember watching the...
For everybody.
Yeah. Do you remember watching the Coliseum home video of WrestleMania 8 and seeing the thing on there that said, due to circumstances beyond our control?
Yes!
That was like, I was almost creeped out by that.
Yeah. Yeah, creeped out is the right term. Yes, exactly.
I'm like 11 years old and wondering what circumstances could there. I'm like, did they get stuck in traffic?
Yeah.
But were these dumb Hoosiers so stupid that they set their clocks back instead of forward? And they were both late for the show.
One time in 1980, dude, I was taking on Andre at Madison Square Garden, and, I was trying to get to my hotel room, dude, but the people, knew I was in the car, and they almost turned the car over because they were so angry to see me, dude.
Jesus.
Yeah,
what
no, they weren't. Yeah, no. No, they didn't.
No. What a fucking yarn spinner. That guy loves a good yarn.
This world he lives in.
Yeah.
I would love to be in it for a day.
Yeah, in this ever-changing world in which he lives in.
Oh, it's making me want to give in and cry, too.
Yeah. Die. Hulk Hogan, die. I don't think he's ever told the same story twice. If he'd just settle on a story, people might start to believe him.
How big was Andre again when he was, 9 feet tall? And
that's the thing. If he would stop fluctuating between 550 and 900 pounds, if he would have just settled on, 600, then maybe we'd believe him.
Right.
But, no, every time he tells the story, it's like frickin' Joe McCarthy. I've got 22 names. I've got 750 names.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, who's your showrunner, man? Who's checking you for continuity? Oh, man. Well, goodness gracious. On that note, by the way, I just saw on Facebook, it just went away. I got to find this. Dixie Carter just posted. Dixie Carter posted on Facebook. No, my mom doesn't. I'm not going to talk about her anymore.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Dixie Carter says.
You mean I was bringing her up to annoy you? I'm sorry, then.
She does a good enough job of that on her own. Dixie Carter posted, Sting just called me with an additional stipulation for the Jeff Jarrett versus Jeff Hardy cage match tomorrow night at Final Resolution. He said if Jarrett loses, either he or Karen will be fired. I was really looking forward to this match tomorrow. Now I can't wait.
Dixie is hard at work on her time machine so she can make it be tomorrow night.
Yeah. And simultaneously be 11 years ago. I literally don't have the energy thanks to Trader Joe's, and I no longer have a good enough bank of swear words to even attempt to explain how I feel about this post. So
don't care.
I think now that we've talked about TNA to sandwich this nostalgia conversation, now I'm sufficiently pissed off. Now I'm ready to sign off. What do you think?
I'm going to leave on one note here. Mark Mann from the Torch message board pointed this out to me. When Lillian was dancing around the ring with Hornswoggle on SmackDown the other night, and
yes.
Mike Cole said they were horsing around.
Yep.
You might hate Michael Cole, but fuck, that was awesome.
Yes. Yep. I give them credit for squeezing in horse jokes as often as they can.
Yes, absolutely. Sarah Jessica Parker jokes, anything like that, I will appreciate. I understand.
Yeah.
Just take my hat off if I wore a hat.
Yeah, according to What Would Tyler Durden Do? Sarah Jessica Parker is Secretariat. And her husband, Matthew Broderick, is gay Thomas Edison.
Yes!
Oh, my God. So, anyway, yeah, I like that as a note to end on.
I'm trying to end on a happier note than TNA, yeah.
There you go. All right, good deal. Well, I'm going to sign off, and Dusty, it was a pleasure doing a show with you.
All right, well, I'd shake your hand if I could trust you, but I can't, so I won't. So I'll just say that for Eric Nelson, this is then Stunt Granny Audio Number, who gives a flying fuck? And we'll try to do better next time.